Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Oh, I see.
All right. We are on Talk Shoe, and this is the NextGenerationChurch.com conference call for the month of October. It is October 21st, Sunday evening. And my name is DJ Chuang. I'm honored and privileged to be a guest host tonight to talk about the topic of revitalizing Asian American churches. We'll do a quick roundabout, see who's on the call, and if you want to introduce yourself, your name, your location, and then we'll get started. I'll start with a maybe 5-10 minute intro on the topic, and then open it up for discussion and talk back. All right, who's up first? Introduce yourself. Tell us where you're from.
I'll go first. My name's David Park, and I'm the, I guess, host of NextGenerationChurch.com, a blog about Asian American culture and faith. I'm dialing in from Atlanta, Georgia.
Very good. Welcome, David. Next up.
I'm Cyrus Lee. I'm an Asian American Studies major at University of California, Davis. I'm dialing in from Northern California.
Welcome, Cyrus. Thank you.
Sorry. Joshua Settles. Calling in from Nashville, Tennessee, and currently serving in ministry with Asian American college students and also at a Korean church, and calling in from Nashville, Tennessee.
Very good. Welcome, Joshua. And I think that's everybody that I recognize on the call. Anybody else? All right. And my name is DJ Chuang. I currently serve as executive director of L Squared Foundation. The website is l2foundation.org, and I've been working with them for about 7 years now, and our mission at L Squared is to develop leadership and legacy for Asian Americans. And that's afforded me an opportunity to kind of survey the landscape of what's happening with next generation Asian American churches, and I'm now based in South Orange County in Southern California. And what we'd like to do on this call is review a presentation I shared several weeks ago, September 26th, at Evergreen Baptist Church in Rosemead in the Los Angeles area. About 150 pastors and ministry leaders gathered together for an occasional gathering. That's what they called it. And it's a time to bring people together, to encourage them, and bring them some inspiration and perspective. And some of the leaders that put that together included Lewis Lee of MESA, Ministry of English-Speaking Asians, Tommy Joe of Epic Movement with Campus Crusade, Ben Shen, a Talbot Seminary graduate, Tom Steers, Navigators, Asian American Ministries. And they are part of the organizing team for the National Asian American Leadership Conference that's coming up next March in 2008. Their website, aalc2008.org, and they're expecting 400 to 500 Asian American ministry leaders for this national conference that probably happens every 3 or 4 years or so. So one of the few live events that really brings together English-speaking Asian Americans. And so during that presentation 3 weeks ago or so, I'm going to compress my 30-minute presentation to about under 10 minutes just to kind of get our minds reacclimated with what I shared and kind of kickstart this conversation tonight. So my vantage point is to kind of observe, connect, interview, and research what's happening with the next generation of Asian Americans, those that are English-speaking. And one of the things that we are particularly interested in is and our hearts moved to find a way to serve is that we've seen that the second generation Asian American, those that may have immigrated to America when they were children, and those that maybe were born here, that they have a unique perspective on life, and they're kind of raised in a traditional Asian culture, perhaps, and yet the rest of their life from Monday to Saturday is in a mainstream, mostly white, perhaps multicultural kind of a context in the United States. But yet when it comes to churches, we notice that our assumption is many of them do not fit readily within a mainstream church, and they don't really fit in the immigrant, intergenerational, bilingual, or trilingual Asian church. And so our assumption is that perhaps a new kind of church would really better minister to the unique issues and identity and needs that they have. And so as we look at the broad landscape, I'm running through my slides and highlight a few of those things just to give us some reference point for our conversation tonight. So about 5% of the U.S. population right now is Asian American. This is as of 2004. That rounds up to about 14.5 million. Some estimates have put it at 15 million at this point in 2007. And that's going to double within our lifetime, most of our lifetime. By 2050, it's estimated to be over 33 million. And about 8% of the American population. Within that segment, we have a large population of Chinese, over 33 million, Filipino, Indian, Vietnamese, Korean, and Japanese. Those are the top six most populous Asian American ethnicities, and there's probably 30 other Asian ethnicities in that mix. And while there's a lot of diversity with all those different Asian ethnicities, they come from very different nationalities, with different languages, different cultures. When they immigrate and they establish themselves and live lives here in America, I think there's also many things that they have in common because of marginalized, and they have that Eastern perspective on the world that they have more in common than they have differences. Is what we can build upon. Broadly speaking, Asian Americans are very highly educated. They have the highest graduation rates at high school, college, and postgraduate. They have the highest median family income of any racial grouping. And so there's a lot that Asian Americans have in terms of potential to really contribute and make a difference in their generation. And yet, about 56% Asian Americans are unchurched. This is a Barna figure. It's probably higher in many locations, and maybe there's just not real detailed, specific, comprehensive study on this. But at least half of Asian Americans are unchurched. There's a good segment that are under the age of 18, anywhere from 26% to 30%, depending where you are, and a percentage I extrapolated, 69.7% of Asian Americans speak English very well. And yet when we look at the landscape, most Asian American churches tend to be immigrant, intergenerational churches that are predominantly led by Asian language leaders and all that comes with that cultural perspective. And yet there's this huge opportunity for English-speaking Asian Americans that we think contextualized ministry can make a difference in. And so that's a broad picture of what the opportunity is. And my thesis in the presentation, the big idea was we need new kinds of churches, and we need all kinds of churches to reach all kinds of people. And when it comes to next-generation Asian Americans, we need more contextualized next-generation Asian American churches, those that might be multi-Asian or multi-ethnic, to reach this. Well, not just up-and-coming. I mean, they're already here. They're all over the country. And through my research, I've found over 150 English-speaking, Asian-led churches that are just led by English-speaking pastors, and they're all over the country. It's not just a West Coast phenomena. It's I've found churches in New York, in D.C., in Chicago, in Dallas, even Austin, Texas, and even out in Atlanta. And certainly they are out here in Seattle and Northern Cal and Southern Cal as well. And when we look at these churches, many of them do not address the ethnic racial issues directly, but just by having an Asian-led pastor and a congregation that is either majority Asian or significantly Asian, anywhere from 30 to 99% Asian, it just brings a different flavor in terms of how they do church, how they worship, and how they relate to each other. And that's welcomed this next generation of Asian Americans. That's also allowed them to just have a place where they feel comfortable coming to church without having to explain who they are and where they come from. And so that's a quick review of what I shared with pastors and leaders about 3 weeks ago. And my encouragement to them is, well, we need new kinds of churches, so let's encourage the creativity that the next generation has, give them permission to try new things, raise up young leaders, and support church planting with people, prayer, and funds. All right, and then I kind of quoted, I just found out that this quotation is probably from Chairman Mao from Communist China. But let a hundred flowers or 1,000 flowers bloom, and I use that metaphor to say, hey, let's let churches bloom, and let's see new things happen for a new generation. So that's my thesis, and I open it up for discussion. We had some robust conversations during that presentation, and we've got another 45 minutes or so. I'd like to hear your feedback, and let's get our conversation going for tonight. New kinds of churches.
DJ, it's Joshua here.
All right.
I think it might be helpful if we could frame if there's a question around which we can frame our discussion. And I listened again to your presentation in preparation for this phone call. I don't have a question that would frame the discussion, but I think it would help me to engage this issue, I think, more concretely. Do you have a particular question that you've used as you've been doing this research to sort of animate your activities, or a particular question that these churches are trying to address as these 100 churches you mentioned that have started in the last decade have formed? Is there a central sort of question or demographic or issue that they are attempting to address? Maybe that itself is the question. I don't know.
Well, that's a good open question to just kind of get our conversation going. I didn't really wanted to just present it as a provoker thought. You know, what is the opportunity for the next generation, and what is the opportunity to reach this next generation? And then we can kind of begin to drill down in different directions in terms of what do these churches look like, what kind of leader does it take to really reach the next generation, what's working, what's not working. And and even during that presentation, I found many people were coming from an immigrant church perspective, and so they wanted to find out, well, what can we do as an immigrant church to reach the next generation? And that's a little bit outside of my area of research, but I hear their concern, and we realize that's a very big question, and we don't have answers for that right off, but we're sensitive to that. That's a pressing need as well. In terms of what, let me try to unpack a little bit in terms of what these next generation churches look like. Okay. Let me make two comments and leave it there at that. Two things I've noticed. These new churches are started up by 20, 30-something-year-old pastors. They're trained in evangelical seminaries and kind of going out by faith and launching these new churches. And just to say it, planting new churches is a very challenging thing. And so typically it takes a strong leader, one with vision, one with faith, to go out and start a church. It's not a solitary effort. It takes a lot of prayer. It takes rallying around sponsor churches, whether it's a mother church or a network of churches or a denomination or all the above, as well as building up a core team, pulling that together with a vision to reach this next generation, whether specifically next generation Asian Americans or just next generation in terms of 20-something and 30-somethings that are in this multicultural context. And as they've launched out, I'm beginning to see that there's churches that have been started in the past 10 years, over 100 that are Asian-led, less than 10 years old, all over the country, and they've been able to establish themselves. I was part of one myself. So between 1997 and 2000, I was part of a church in Northern Virginia that started with a core group of 12. I joined on when it grew to about 60, and we saw it grow to about 150 in 5 years. And in the Northeast or Mid-Atlantic, that's significant, just to have a church start up and get established and be able to kind of sustain itself. And just last March, I was able to go to their 10th anniversary celebration. So they're up and running. They've been able to meet their budget every year. And I think just to have a church that's led by that next generation, that's comprised of mostly 20 and 30 somethings, just have the ownership of their church, how they do ministry, is a significant and big step. I think just to have that is a significant thing. In terms of drilling down into specifics, those can look like all kinds of things. I'm not sure if you'd be interested in hearing more of those stories or kind of do more diagnostic things or take the conversation in a different direction. That's my first thoughts.
Hey, DJ, this is David Park, and I had a question whether you felt there were some clear weaknesses that the next generation churches were addressing, or perhaps are they creating new problems that perhaps were unintentional, but perhaps they thought, hey, we need to start a church and that will solve this problem, but in so doing, they've created perhaps another problem. Do you find that to be the case, or do you find that they're really addressing consistently a particular need that wasn't met?
Boy, that's a profound question. Probably the biggest new problem that's been created, if you want to phrase it that way, is the tension and the uneasiness of the relationship between the immigrant church and these new kinds of churches. Some of that comes out of what you might call church splits, because some of these independent churches have been started under less than ideal and less than amicable terms. So when that's at the seed and at the beginning of a church's story, and it continues to be unresolved over a long time, that can fester. That's probably the one that's most glaring and most obvious, and people do voice from time to time. So some of the next generation churches that are able to start with the blessing of the First Generation Church. They avert this issue and they avert this problem. They have a good resolution right from the beginning that they have the blessing to start a new church. That's probably the biggest one right off the bat. Starting well is a very valuable thing for long-term health and longevity. A second issue that's a little more tentative from my perspective is by just having a separate church that looks more or less the same as mainstream church in terms of their worship music, in terms of their preaching, in terms of the forms and methodology of how they do church. Everything looks the same except the people that are there happen to be Asian American or happen to be multi-ethnic. That's probably more of a lost opportunity. I feel comfortable saying that rather than a problem or weakness, but it's a lost opportunity. The gospel potentially could go deeper into ministering and addressing cultural idols, ministry and addressing special gifts and things that we do bring from our cultural narrative. Many of these churches perhaps haven't found a way or haven't realized that they have this tremendous opportunity because they have a different composition of people that they haven't really taken advantage of. So those are two main things that come to my mind. Cyrus and Joshua, would you like to chime in with some of your thoughts on that?
Could also a weakness to these new churches popping up also be the possibility of like the age groups and people being in different stages of life. And so you have a discipleship. If there was a discipleship program in these churches, they'd all sort of be in the sort of same area of life. As opposed to like someone who is been in the working world, or these are like postgraduate Asian Americans. Let's say maybe there's someone who's been there for like they can't be more there for more than 10 years because you're telling me that they sort of started popping up in the last 10 years, right?
Right.
So isn't there sort of like a wouldn't it be also be like a better fit if like they weren't all just like yuppies, right? Young urban professionals, but who have actually like maybe 10, 15 years down in their career, have changed career paths, have started a family, something like that. Sort of a discipleship model that sort of shows where they're all just not in the same life stages, I guess. Is that possibly like a weakness or I would see that would probably be it.
Yeah, good point.
I think I would echo that concern, and I think it's somewhat inherent in the development of a church that more or less is coming out of, not necessarily out of a split, but out of a need to minister to a next generation that is in some measure not connected with the immigrant church. And so not only are you having just sort of the generational divide that is a problem in any kind of evangelical church or other church where you don't have multiple generations interacting and lose a great deal, and I would even venture to say that it's not particularly healthy, scripturally speaking, to have that sort of dynamic, but I think it exacerbates this disconnect, and as you were talking, DJ, this loss increases the possibility of this lost opportunity to really develop an authentic voice or a unique voice, we could say, another way of saying that, a unique voice coming out of the Asian American Christian experience. Because there's no dialogue, they're dialoguing only with their generation, and the relationship with the first generation may or may not be contentious, but certainly in a corporate way, it's not a continuous conversation. That creates some challenges for that. And the other piece, I think, is it does not I think it still leaves the problem, as it were, of the upcoming generation that's always going to be upcoming, that are growing up in ethnic immigrant churches. And so they essentially have no one to help them navigate what it means to be Asian American, because those who are doing so have all left and formed their own church. And they are here stuck until they're 18 or whatever, and can go off to college and have different experiences. They're repeating the cycle, and so there's no integration of that experience. So I think that segmentation is potentially damaging. I don't think it has to be, but I think it's certainly a potential problem, not to mention just sort of the issue of socioeconomic isolation. We're talking, I would guess, in most cases, largely about college-educated professional folks. That has its own set of issues.
Yeah, that's
and it'll
a good
all
thought.
Be solved when David Park finishes seminary and he can move back to and he and I will start a church together.
Well, you'll be surprised.
You heard it here first.
You'll be surprised at what God can use. I mean, these conversations, and we're recording them, can really be, inspiration is a little too loaded of a word, but it can be fodder for some of these up-and-coming pastors to really shape what those new churches would look like, and perhaps be more inviting to a multi-generational approach. Just to kind of take a step back, it's not unusual for new churches to start up reaching either singles or young adults and kind of just grow the church with that demographic for that generation. You kind of marry them and raise their kid and bury them. That's a church life cycle. That's typical, but like you said, Joshua, it's a lost opportunity that we don't have churches that are able to span multiple generations, so that, as the Bible speaks of, that we pass on the faith generation to generation.
Well, and I think I would add it makes it, when you're talking about people who may have an ambivalent relationship with their ethnic identity, it really, and you mentioned, if they are, quote-unquote, doing church like any other mainstream, i.e. white congregation, what is the distinguishing factor other than the fact that all the folks in the pews most of the folks in the pews are Asian American? If that's not addressed, and even can it really be addressed in the absence of those who are most tied to the immigrant culture? Can that dialogue happen? Can a theology, a practice of faith, develop in the absence of an ongoing conversation with the ethnic immigrant church?
I think you've put your finger on a valuable opportunity, and there are certainly a large number of people that are interested in trying to figure out how to bridge the cultures and generations. But yet, after 4 or 5 generations of Chinese Americans being here, and now we're probably into 2 and potentially, about 2 or maybe 3 generations of Korean Americans here. We've had a number of generations of Japanese Americans. We've had hundreds and thousands of leaders and families and people that have kind of gone through the course of time, but we we don't have many good working models and examples of how to navigate this huge cultural and linguistic differences between generations. And there's people that are still hopeful for that, but maybe this is an Asian tendency, or it's just a human tendency that unless someone figures out the solution, that we just aren't real good at trying new things to figure it out.
You know, you mentioned, DJ, not to interrupt, but you mentioned that a consistent factor or characteristic was that these strong leaders of these next generation churches tended to be coming from evangelical seminaries. Do you find that theologically perhaps we don't have quite the vocabulary yet to perhaps, you know, create the narrative or tie the narrative back to what it is we're trying to express? Do you find theologically we're perhaps deficient? I mean, I think in the West, perhaps we haven't ever really had to negotiate between cultures as much as we're trying to do in the United States, especially with recent waves of immigration since 1965 and then all these different identities and segregated churches. But then here's this very kind of raw group that doesn't really have a theology. So maybe our worship is just reflecting our theology in the sense that it's not diverse because our theology is not really diverse.
Mm.
Is that a possibility?
That's a very likely possibility. And even theologically speaking, we don't have language and framework to really navigate multiple cultures. That's very astute. Very astute. Hey, I want to say hi to Cyrus Lee. I wanted to see if you had any questions that you wanted to raise while you were here.
I think the theology question is always sort of in the back of my head also. I think that it's weird. Even when you do have really quote-unquote famous or well-known Asian American speakers, many of them, they don't have the theology, or it's not like geared towards Asian America, I guess. I think that's a big thing that's always like lingering.
Thank you. Yeah, so if it's underdeveloped, then it's the opportunity and the call is, well, who would God raise to kind of step into that and begin developing that? Would it be the pastors, or would it be the academic types? I commend Tim Singh's efforts up in the Bay Area. He started the Institute for Asian American Christianity, Institute for the Study of Asian American Christianity. He's very, very much in a way leading the charge on this. I think he has a saying that we can't really understand Asian American theology, or Asian American Christianity, or Asian American theology, without understanding Asia. So there's some work that's beginning to percolate in the academic arena that would be related to this. But as I understand academia, it can take some time before it trickles down from academia into seminary and into pastors and then the churches.
Well, here's a place where I think the intercultural conversation is important, because I think there are lost opportunities to learn interculturally. How does one develop a theology that is relevant or really does speak to the challenges and opportunities faced by Asian Americans in this century, or Asian Canadians, if the case may be. But I think it would be daunting to think about doing that in a vacuum. But the fact is, I mean, we have a diverse history, and we're not the first people to have to wrestle with the question of how do we take what has been sort of this white evangelical or conservative matrix of theology and apply it in a different way. We've seen that happen. I mean, it happens in Africa. It happens in Asia, where people are being trained in seminary, and yet they're contextualizing their messages and speaking very clearly to the realities on the ground. And yet it seems here in the States, we have difficulty being that intentional. Perhaps there's some fear that we shouldn't be that intentional. I don't know. But on the other hand, I do wonder if the theology cannot develop without a development first of a social sense, a development of an identity as Asian American. And certainly I think those things can happen at the same time, or certainly in dialogue with each other. But we take the case of Black Americans, for instance. The experience of Black Americans shaped their theology, and the theology shaped what it meant to be a Black American. So I think there are modeled ways that conversation can happen. But if Asian Americans are not thinking of themselves in an intentional way as Asian Americans, or are reluctant to sort of own that identity, as you mentioned in your seminar, you know, these churches won't even say that they're Asian churches necessarily.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Which indicates a bit of ambivalence, I think, maybe not entirely, but there's a measure of ambivalence. Is it okay that they say that you're an Asian American church? Or does that somehow to them feel wrong to be intentional in that way? And I think you'd get answers across the spectrum. Some people would really feel as if it's not okay to say that that's what we are.
I think that's a great point, Joshua. I feel that a lot of people would, a lot of Asian Americans would more readily claim their proximal kind of the ethnicity that they're closest to, rather than claim the larger umbrella of Asian American. Maybe there's a range, but maybe that's the problem, is that we find ourselves across this whole spectrum of Korean American, and then how fobbish we are within that. You know, how close we are on the gradient between Korea and American, and then how close we would connect ourselves to those who are also Asian, whether Vietnamese, Chinese, and whether if I would even put myself in the same category with different Asian ethnicities. So, and then how much more am I going to say one step from, you know, let's just, I think there is a contingency of people, of Asian Americans, that say, let's just throw the whole baby out with the bathwater. I'm just American. Let's just cut to the chase. If this is the inevitable outcome, is to just kind of, you know, be American, then let's just go there. And I think what's dangerous in the church is we tend to spiritualize it. You know, or I'm just Christian. I'm a Christian more than I'm anything else. And then we kind of lose our sense of ethnicity altogether. But I do think there is a tension there, because African Americans have that, have at least had the pressure cooker of slavery to say, and other historical circumstances to say, well, you know what, whether anybody else acknowledges it or not, everybody knows that we're African American. We are Black, and we are not like you. But I think in today's society, the pressure cooker is kind of, it's ambiguous. We don't really know how to categorize ourselves. We wrestle with ourselves. So to start calling ourselves and creating categories and churches for ourselves also seems to be just as much of a dilemma.
I think it's subversive in a way. because it looks head on at the racialization in our society and acknowledges it without allowing it to control or dominate. It says, okay, you know, we're going to just live in this reality that race and ethnicity matters. We're not going to sidestep that theologically or in the way we do church or in the way we live our lives. We're going to embrace that in an intentional kind of way. And I think that does take a measure of intentionality and thoughtfulness. And I think it in the context of church, I think it's important that I think pastors, whether we're talking about, you know, second generation or third generation Asian American churches, or we're talking about English congregations within ethnic churches, I think pastors certainly have the opportunity to begin to shape that and to begin to speak to those issues in an intentional way. And let's just bring this stuff to the surface. And so as I sit in a congregation with folks who have above average incomes and all these dynamics that are related to their Korean American identity, and it's quite obvious to me that all of this is at play, it's patently absurd for anyone there to kind of assert that their ethnicity is irrelevant. And yet, in so many ways, they feel as if it is, or they talk as if it were. But it impinges upon everything in their life, from when they marry to who they date to how they spend their money. It's just not talked about in that way. And I think that is a huge, huge missed opportunity, not only in terms of development of ethnic identity, but in bringing the gospel to bear in the totality of people's lives. And I think we're losing a generation of folks who find that this gospel is not at all relevant to them, because it is only esoteric and theoretical, and it is not really speaking to your life issues.
Ouch. Kiss it and make it better. I think you're absolutely right. Although it's harsh criticism, but I think it's necessary criticism to accept and wrestle with. Again, I think what Cyrus pointed out is very key. I don't think we have a narrative theology to tie the two loose ends together. I think African American theologians and other liberation theologians have done that in their context, but I think as an Asian American, we haven't done that, and I'm not so sure if we can do it well because of our conflicted interests. I think that there is a side of us, which you mentioned in your blog not too long ago, about there is an aspect of whether we really do want to be or know how to be as Asian as we'd like to be, because I do think there is an element of self-hatred there. I do think there is a notion that we might put ourselves out of a profitable life, an economically satisfying lifestyle. I think there is tension there, and perhaps we don't want to rock the boat because we're afraid of where we might end up.
And on top of that, here's the irony. The economic shift globally is moving into Asia. Korea, China, India, and so on. And so with the economic shift, it's just around the corner. It's going to be a power shift. There's going to be global cultural shift that's going to be happening. And yet here we are looking at these Asian American churches, and they really aren't engaging that in their own context.
That's the irony to me as well, because there are definitely, it seems to be, I've seen people that are not of Asian descent who are much more up on current Asian trends and cultures, and you know, whether it's manga to, you know, anime to the martial arts to the you know, independent films, they're much more read up on Asian culture than somebody like myself would be. And then the real question is are our churches kind of culturally retarding us? That's a heavy word, but I wonder if it's because maybe you could take a poll of people who are in church versus not in church. Maybe there is a divide happening there as well, to the degree of Asian culture.
I had an interesting conversation with a young Chinese American student the other day. He's not a believer. He's actually agnostic, atheist. But incidentally, in the conversation, he just mentioned how grateful he was that his parents made him go to Chinese school, taught him the language, involved him in the culture, and how annoyed he is when people Americanize their names, and how he wants to give his child a Chinese name because it means something. The irony of that is to have that conversation with this guy and to have other conversations with, and obviously people are all over the board, but to have other conversations with people who are in church, Korean Americans, who would then say, "Oh, I'm not Korean. I don't." It's sort of a very surreal experience, because it does raise the issue, which is raised historically: does becoming a Christian mean you have to become a white Westerner?
Ooh.
And I think that's an issue that churches have not adequately, certainly in my exposure in the Asian American community, I have not seen or heard that addressed yet adequately. I think the African American church has had to address it by the force. We've had to address it. And I think the global church is addressing that. But I think in the Asian American context, it's just the sort of elephant in the room that, well, we're just not going to talk about it. We're just going to act as if it's not an issue. But it is an issue.
Yeah, I'm not even sure the elephant's in the room. It's just set aside. And
the elephant's outside the room.
Yeah, it's outside the room.
I think we're in the belly of the elephant.
Wait a minute. No, the elephant went from outside the room, and now we're in the elephant. Now
we're inside the elephant in the room. That's why we don't talk about it.
Wow. We're in the belly of the elephant.
That sounds like a blog post title.
I claimed it. I said it. I'm just kidding. But, you know, I think that's a very interesting perspective, because I wonder if there is a kind of a bubble mentality where the Asians that were brave enough or desperate enough to take the immigration dive are, if there is some significant psychologically or different mentality that creates a different type of church, creates a different type of psyche. Are they after me? Have they found me? Who ratted me out?
Yeah, who was that?
Osiris?
California or Tennessee?
Oh, sorry about that. That was over. That was down just past my building.
Right. That was kind of exciting.
Sorry about that.
All right. Well, we got about 5 minutes. Any parting thoughts? This is... glad we could voice the lost opportunity. It's hard to pull together this huge umbrella of diversity in America.
I'd just like
maybe
to say,
it's
just
like
Jesus taken down, that's all.
Sorry, I cut you off.
Sorry?
I think I cut you off, Joshua.
No, I wasn't saying anything significant. I'm sure you were.
DJ,
yes.
Do you think it'd be possible for, obviously these churches are being born because there's a strength, there's a beauty, there's something, like you said, there's a great opportunity here. And I think we need, obviously, it's very easy for us kind of people who aren't church planning or are not leaders of these types of churches to kind of criticize some of the dynamics that are perhaps problematic or, you know, do they really have a theology to support what they're doing? Well, obviously they're growing. They're obviously there is an appetite and a hunger for this type of church. What do you see happening from here?
My first reaction is these new churches are attracting people. It's ministering people in terms of giving them a place where they feel comfortable to hear the gospel and to be around people that they relate to. But at the same time, when you gather these people and you try to raise racial, ethnic issues, people aren't really interested. So the people aren't interested, and the leader tries to push it, you might push people away. And that's a huge risk when you're just trying to start up a church.
Right.
And I'm not so sure that if a church started with a strong racial ethnic flavor that it would minister to people, because even in pop culture, even in sociology, even in Asian American studies, well, except for Asian American studies in the confines of the classroom, these issues are just not in the conscious awareness of everyday people. So how do you surface that in a social context like a church where people would be receptive and want to engage it and work it out?
That's where I think the socioeconomic piece needs to come in. And perhaps it is in some of these places. But I think when you bring that dimension in, I mean, we have to deal with the fact it needs to be talked about. Why can't a church be planted in these circumstances more easily? Well, we're dealing with a very highly educated, well-off demographic. And that has ethnic dimensions to it. And there's a, reality of race and racialization in our society that contributes to that. So in some sense, it's a discipleship issue and a stewardship issue that I think if churches, whatever their dynamic is, if they don't address that, I think there's a failure in terms of discipleship. So I think that's a door to enter into addressing those issues. And I think it would take a bold pastor to do that. But I do think if it isn't done at some level, they're failing to fully engage even some of the things that many of them are passionate about. If you're passionate about social justice, let's talk about, why do Asian American households have higher than average incomes? We need to deal with those kinds of issues. We can't simply do good works and not have a mirror in front of ourselves, and of course that would make people uncomfortable. I'll throw this in just in the last 30 seconds because I've been talking a lot, but one other thing I have, our church is sort of tinkering with this model or idea, is the sort of chapel within a church model that is apparently being tried in some places. I don't know a lot about it. My pastor's talked some about it. Where you have essentially a more or less autonomous yet integrated chapel that is a part of an ethnic immigrant church. And so they operate more or less independently and yet retain their relationship with the parent church without being entirely independent, which may give you the best of both worlds or the worst of both. I don't know, but that's another thing that's on the horizon, I think, that may be an intermediate step in some of these cases, maybe one point along the spectrum in this field of a thousand flowers that you referred to. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thought. And there are a number of churches that are doing what they call a church in a church model for growing English ministries within an immigrant church. Sometimes that leads to that place of inevitability when that English ministry becomes large enough and has enough of its own resources that sometimes they want to launch out. But some of these new churches that I've found have that kind of a story. They started like a church in a church and then eventually got to the point where they just needed to either find its own place or just weren't able to use the model. And I need to wrap up this call, so I'm not going to dig down on this, but there is a lot more going on with that. And I think given the rising cost of real estate, churches are needing to be creative about how they use facilities. Perhaps there are more ways to use a building, like church in a church, or even a couple of autonomous churches that share a building or something that could be helpful down the road. All right, I'm going to wrap up the formal part of this phone call. This has been our NextGenerationChurch.com TalkBack conference call. And thank you for tuning in, and we'll try to pull this together next month. My name is DJ Chuang.
Thanks so much, DJ.
Yeah, enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, DJ.
Thank you
and
all.
Next month we'll be doing a very similar conversation, but it'll be more on the young adult and college students context. What's their view of Asian American church and where it could go from there?
That's
current state.
Thank
you. Tune in next month.
All right.